Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts, just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
And fellas, I was expecting this minute was going to be all about flags. We were going to be talking about flags, flagpoles, or anything to do with the stars and stripes, blah, blah, blah. And
cotter pins, maybe.
Yeah, anything, you know, climbing grease or whatever. But it, as it turns out, and as I've discovered, people in the flag business are not interested in marketing their companies. Many people called, nobody responded. And, you know, we had a bunch of, I mean, there were all kinds of cool things we could have talked about. Brian and I share something in common that we were both born under a 49-star flag.
True.
Anyway, we're going to push all that aside because today we're going to be thinking laterally.
Yes. And, by necessity.
Yes, by necessity. Even this, as you see before you. So we're going to be talking about lateral thinking and first principles and getting the job done. So that's what we're here in minute 23. And speaking of minute 23, Hal, would you give us a refresher course on what's going on in Camp Lehigh?
I'm sure that I would. On the Camp Lehigh training grounds, the trainer's voice roars over the recruits scrambling at the flagpole. This army's in trouble. Get up there, Hodge. Hodge, cocky but clumsy, slips and crashes back to the dirt. Come on, get up there. Nobody's got that flag in 17 years. Now fall back into line. Come on, fall in. Let's go. Back into formation. Steve Rogers, small but sharp-eyed, steps toward the pole. The trainer snaps, Rogers, I said fall in. Undeterred, Steve calmly pulls the pin from the flagpole's base, letting it collapse with a thud. He retrieves the flag and hands it to the stunned trainer. Thank you, sir, he says, climbing into the car with Agent Carter. In another corner of the camp, recruits grunt through push-ups under the blazing sun. Peggy Carter paces, her voice sharp. Faster, ladies. Come on. My grandmother has more life in her. God rest her soul. Move it. Colonel Phillips, walking beside Dr. Abraham Erskine, casts a skeptical glance. You're not really thinking about picking Rogers, are you? Erskine's eyes glint with conviction. I wasn't just thinking about it.
You know, one of these days, I'm just going to take all of Hal's synopses and put them together, and we can listen to the Captain America audiobook.
It'll be the whole movie.
Yeah. It'll be an audiobook, exactly.
Fantastic.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
wow.
Goodness.
Well, here we are in, you know, we're watching all these guys try to climb up the pole when they haven't sat down and figured out the thing they want is the flag, not climbing up the pole to the flag. So, good old Steve, taking the whole big picture in, realizes from first principles he's got to get the flag closer to him, and sure enough, he does it. And that is, I think it's taught in a million different, Harvard Business School scenarios, case studies and things like that, what to do and, you know, how to step back and get back to the brass tacks of a thing, of getting rid of all the extra fluff around your destination, your goal. And there's a lot of great ones in history. And I think, Brian, you had something that you wanted, you were just champing at the bit, is the word?
Yes. Champing, yeah. Well, I've got a couple. And the classic one, and I mean classical in all sense of the word classical, is the legend of the Gordian Knot. If you're familiar with the Gordian Knot, in 333 BC, Alexander the Great rolls up to the city of Gordium and is shown this enormous knotted cord so tightly twisted that it looked like it would be impossible to untie. And an oracle had foretold that anyone who could undo this knot would rule the city and rule all of Asia. So Alexander pulls out his sword, slices the knot in half so that it just collapses into a heap of loose bits of cord, and mission accomplished. He undid the knot. He was declared ruler of the land. And so, you know, that's the Ur example of lateral thinking, I think. And it reminded me of a scene from the first Avengers movie when Steve Rogers is arguing with Tony Stark. And Steve tells Tony, he's not the guy, you're not the guy to make the sacrifice play. You're not the guy to lay down a wire and let the other guy crawl over you. And Tony says, I think I would just cut the wire. And it's a nice bit of character development because Steve is the guy who would lie down on the wire or jump on top of the grenade, while Stark would look for that clever loophole that would let him win the Kobayashi Maru scenario, you know. And so in this film, Captain America: First Avenger, we see Steve being the lateral thinker, while in the Avengers, we see that maybe Tony Stark's got a little leg up on him there, you know. So it's an interesting character development, interesting twist. Shows you the contrast between the two men and their approaches to problem solving.
And a nice one crossing into the Star Trek franchise. I appreciate
Thank you very much.
that. Good job.
Yes,
We all know the
always good to have a
Kobayashi
nod.
Maru. Come
Yeah,
on.
that's
Of
become
course we
part of
do.
our culture. So, one of the ones that I was thinking of when I was first pondering this lateral thing. And P.S. I would love to thank my wife for coming up with this idea when we were strapped for an idea on what to do when we couldn't get anybody to talk about flags. One of the earliest versions that I've heard of explaining lateral thinking was the construction of the Seagram's Building in New York. This story has been applied to other ones, but as far as I can tell, this is where it came from. The Seagram's Building in New York was built, and they kind of went for a low bid on elevators, on the machinery in the elevators. Otis Elevator Company pretty much owned all of the scenery, you know, the elevator scenery in Manhattan. And so they put in a low cost one, and the problem was at 8:30 in the morning when everybody's trying to get to work, the elevators were too slow. Everybody was complaining that how come they have to wait so long for the elevators? So the architects of the building were trying to figure out what to do to get faster motors. They would have to not only haul 50 stories up, put in more heavier, higher speed motors, but they'd also have to redesign the structure, the railings, the counterweight, the ball bearings that held the counterweights up. And this was going to cost in excess of $500,000. So what somebody in the office came up with is, why don't we buy a bunch of floor length, floor to ceiling mirrors and put them alongside the elevators in the lobby? And they tried this out, and what happens is people would be checking out, straightening their ties, adjusting their, their pantyhose or whatever, and the complaints about the speed of the elevators went away because people would pause and check themselves out before they got in the elevator. It was only maybe 15 seconds looking, but that made all the difference in the world of noticing the speed, and they saved a fortune by, just stopping off at Sears or whatever the equivalent, in the 50s of getting a bunch of mirrors for the lobby.
I have never heard that story. I thought,
Neither.
here's where I thought you were going with that. I thought that the punchline was going to be, because of the mirrors, people thought there were twice as many elevators.
Yeah, I was thinking that same
That
thing.
too, that could have been it. Yeah.
Right.
But
Just the
yeah.
or
Psychology of it, you know?
right. I thought maybe they were going to make the doors open and close
That's
more
good.
quickly or something that would shorten the route. And of
Yeah.
course, now either in addition to or instead of mirrors, we could just put some flat screens up and sell advertising. And now you've got something to look at while you wait for the elevator.
Another one that a little bit more recent than the Seagram's Building. In 2013, there was a plague striking in Central Africa. Several nations had this, and what happened was they were having massive dehydration all, far into the far territories up into the mountains and things like that, and the way to treat it, rather, I mean, there was no cure for it. It was viral, but the massive dehydration was causing death. So the best way to treat it would be drink water and get electrolytes in you. But the electrolytes were all in the cities, and trying to get them out into the how there's no FedEx to get it up into the jungle. But what there was in Africa, as in most other continents, the Coca-Cola company has an excellent distribution system where, all the Coca-Cola trucks and their bottles, which were returnable bottles, still to this day in Africa, would come back and forth. And what they figured out was the water didn't matter. The water could, as long as it was potable, it was poison. It didn't have to, it could have bacteria in it. You might get sick again drinking it. The trick was getting the electrolytes into your system. So what they figured out was the spaces between the bottles in the crates, they built packets that would fit in between the bottles of Coca-Cola,
Oh,
and they gave
wow.
it to the Coca-Cola bottlers in the cities, and they would go off to the far reaches of whatever country, and get these electrolytes to people that they could just pour into whatever water was drinkable, and reclaim their electrolytes. So yeah, and it saved a fortune because the distribution network was already in place. They didn't have to come up with trucks and caravans to get this stuff into the mountains.
Right. And if you're dealing with trucks and ground transport, there's, the only real penalty is some added weight for the people lifting these crates in and out, but that's not significant, and it's not changing anything in the volume or anything else. So I would assume that in terms of the resources available, there was really effectively no impact.
Yeah, I mean, if you added maybe like 50 pounds to a truck, it was a matter of ounces of getting
Right.
just enough of the salt. You could teaspoons worth could save your life. So, an intriguing way of getting stuff done.
That's beautiful. You know, the word you hear a lot when it comes to lateral thinking solutions like that is the word elegant. Elegant, it means efficient. It means so obvious. I wish somebody had thought of it before. It's the kind of idea that's like, oh yeah, you can just see the light bulb going off over somebody's head, you
Yeah,
know?
it, it and
Right.
it is amazing that it, I mean, I think the reason that the light bulb is used in cartooning and is that it happens that fast. You're like it's suddenly everything is illuminated and you understand what's going on. And sometimes it works the reverse. And I just want to make sure I have this fellow's name right. I believe it's Sidney Spencer, but it was his last name was Spencer, but I should have looked up his first name. But Mr. Spencer was in Iowa. And he worked for the 3M company, and he one of the he was a chemist and was responsible for figuring out adhesives, and he came up with an adhesive that was not that great. It was actually terrible, and it wouldn't stick, it wouldn't stay, it would barely hold on between two pieces of paper. But one of the things that he thought about was he was in a choir, Methodist church choir, and he kept losing his bookmarks. The bookmarks would be, he'd open up his book and the bookmark would fall out. So he figured out if he put a little bit of adhesive on the back of a piece of paper, he could stick it to the inside of his hymnal, and the paper wouldn't fall out unless he pulled on it. And that's when he realized that other people might want to use this. And he went back to 3M, and that's why we have Post-its nowadays. But
Beautiful.
seeing a, you know, it's like he wasn't even, he was solving his own problem, but it's just a serendipity of having those two things matching, a failed adhesive and a need to keep your bookmarks in the right spots. So excellent one.
I've heard a similar story, and it's probably apocryphal, about the invention of Silly Putty. That Silly Putty came out of experiments trying to develop a better plastic explosive, and it didn't
Oh,
explode at
wow.
all, but it had these really cool properties. And somebody figured, hey, let's make a toy out of this. Now, as I say, probably not true, but that's the story I'd always heard about Silly Putty.
I'd heard that as well, and that it was, there were other things that were sort of moldable and stretchable, but then the inadvertent transfer of comic from the Sunday paper onto the Silly Putty, and then you had a duplicate of an image, and you could stretch it and
Yeah.
things, and that's sort of the.
Remember how we used to amuse ourselves?
Yes, exactly.
Remember newspapers?
Yeah, remember newspapers and then
All right.
pulling some of the ink off with
Well,
a rubbery toy?
I have my all-time favorite example of lateral thinking, and it's sort of adjacent to this movie. It involves Allied fighter planes in World War II. A lot of planes came back from their missions absolutely perforated with bullet holes in their tails and their wings. And engineers back home knew they couldn't armor the whole plane because it would make the plane too heavy, but they thought maybe we should reinforce those spots that they're all getting shot up with armor so that they didn't get so many holes in them. And a statistician named Abraham Wald came along and told them they had it exactly backwards because all the holes they'd counted, so carefully counted and mapped and surveyed, had been on planes that successfully made it back to base. And which meant they could still fly. Those hits were not fatal. So Abraham and Wald said, where you want to put the armor is in the places where those holes weren't, because
Yes.
that's where the planes were hit that didn't make it back to base. So they reinforced all these places that planes that made it back successfully did not get hit in and vastly increased the survival rate of these aircraft. And I just love that just seeing the problem sort of inside out, sort of sideways, sort of backwards, leads to the proper illuminated solution.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
A similar one to that is I was thinking of the Sony Corporation in the 70s. I mean, Sony led the world in color television. The Trinitron was nothing was better than the Trinitron. That was the the ideal, the apex of television technology. And Sony decided, well, if we can do AV stuff, we might as well try the audio version and try to come out with lines of high-end audio products. And they were an abysmal failure. They would be throwing money at it and building these gigantic amplifiers and all kinds of things to get AM/FM tuners, and people weren't buying it. They weren't buying in them, and they were trying to figure out, well, we're not in that market. We don't do high-end audio work. People are not interested in our audiophile, expertise. But where could they fit? Where they weren't was in personal audio. If you could shrink down what you could listen to, just take a radio with you, not just a regular radio, but have really good headphones and be able to carry that with you, go jogging, go exercising, take a walk in the park, and then add a cassette player to it. They came up with a Walkman and totally dominated that market of personal audio. That the market really wasn't even there before, other than people carrying maybe a transistor radio with a tinny earpiece in it. They invented that whole idea of personal car portable audio, all because they failed at something else.
And ended up, as you said, creating an entirely new category. So, as I was thinking about this before, I don't have the I'm not even sure I have a single example, much less one as interesting as what you guys have. But I'll share something really quickly, and you can tell me if it fits or not. And as I was thinking back to a couple of career lifetimes ago, working at Microsoft on the Flight Simulator series. And in it was probably Flight Simulator X, kind of mid to late through the development. And there was a feature that we had in testing to simulate de-icing an airliner. So if you have, wintry, snowy conditions, like I'm looking out my window right now, and you had an airliner and you were at an airport at a gate that was equipped, you would taxi, or sorry, not at a gate, but with a station that was equipped, you would taxi over there and stop, and then that would trigger animations of, there was a truck nearby and the big arm comes up and starts spraying vapor over the airplane. Oh, this is pretty cool. I don't think at that point we weren't actually simulating the ice, at least on the ground. So it wasn't really doing anything, but it's cold. I'm conscientious. I'm going to go over here and I want to see the truck do this thing. So I was trying it and it seemed like it works just fine, worked just fine. And then at one point, for just a fraction of a second, the big nozzle, and you could picture something almost like a fire hose on the end of like an articulated arm. At some point, briefly, that nozzle, instead of sort of spraying vapor, started spraying live chickens and pelting the airplane with chickens. And then it stopped. And I'm trying to report this bug, and nobody's believing me. It's late. We've been at this for a long, long time. And sort of pat me on the head, a nice try. And I'm trying to figure it out, trying to figure it out. And I just can't get it to happen again. And then I got thinking about it. Okay. Why in our code, why was there an animation of just a flurry of chickens flying around? Anyway, that's not something that, I mean, there was no obvious reason for it to be. Then I remembered we had done a kind of a literal little barnstorming mission, and it was more of an Easter egg than anything else. And there was a barn in Findlay, Ohio, and it was one of these auto-generated things. So there's 10,000 of these identical looking barns scattered across the country and probably a few other areas as well in our autogen scenery. But there's one in particular, if you knew where it was, and if you dove down and flew through one end with, and both big doors are open, flew through one end, as you buzz through it, there's a flurry of chickens and kind of squawking and stuff as you startle them. So then you're thinking, okay, why would the de-icing trucks at LaGuardia be spraying chickens like this barn? And it finally dawned on me that flying through the barn, that was one of the only areas where we would alter our collision detection to say, okay, your airplane can cross the boundary of a building. It wasn't, we weren't sophisticated enough. We didn't have the computing power to say, to really say, here's the door and here's the roof and you've got 2 feet on either side. It was just, you're going to cross the threshold. And so it eventually dawned on me that, okay, if we have a case where it's okay to break that boundary of a building and the result is chickens, I went back and fired up the de-icing thing and I parked just a little bit off. So the wing was intersecting like the trunk, the truck and the structure there. And I used our slew mode. So you could, you know, kind of manually slide back and forth and reposition the airplane. And if you were positioned correctly with nothing intersecting anything, you got de-ice vapor. If you were intersecting the building at all, it called the wrong animation and started spraying chickens. And it was the same system. It was the same subset or same subroutine rather, you know, to sort of save resources and things. And it's the only time on my professional career in software test engineering that I begged them not to fix a bug. This is just too much fun. I wanted this to be an Easter egg. Think how cool it's going to be. And everybody said, no, we found it. We know about it. Now we have to fix it. So, so again, you know, I didn't accidentally create a new product category or nobody awarded me any territory after figuring that out. In fact, in my mind, I made the product a little worse by doing my job conscientiously.
Now, if you fly through the barn, you get de-iced.
Yeah, just for free. The chickens actually peck the ice off the wings as you go through.
Anyway. I've been thinking while we've been talking that this whole idea of lateral thinking plays a big role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There are many instances of these mighty superheroes kind of outthinking their way through a problem. And the first one that occurs to me is Doctor Strange fighting Dormammu, where at the end of the movie, he puts himself in a time loop where he loses and loses and loses and loses and loses. And Dormammu is just getting frustrated, like, I'm just going to keep killing you. And Doctor Strange says, fine, keep killing me. That means you can't destroy the Earth. And you know, it's this kind of, who would think of the way to beat this guy is to lose to him a million times, you know? And that kind of, I mean, this whole idea of sort of the trickster hero goes back way, way, way in you know, human storytelling. But the person who bends the rules, who breaks the rules, who sees things others don't see, is very often the hero of these kinds of stories. Just like Steve Rogers is the hero of this scene for figuring out that cotter pin.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I was thinking of military applications of this, and one of the more the funnier ones. I don't know, it's a serious topic, but after the Falklands War, there were minefields set up by the Argentinian army, and the British forces afterwards were trying to figure out how to get rid of the minefields that were put in all around the base, you know, like the shoreline of the Falklands. And the thing is that where they did that, they had mowed everything down, put in mines, and then let the wild grasses and brush grow up over it. And, you know, you could send people in with chainsaws and lawnmowers, but they'd blow up. So what they did, one of the things the Falklands is famous for is they have an enormous amount of sheep there. And the sheep weigh under 100 pounds, and they would not set off a mine. So what the British army did was they got herds of sheep and put them down in these fields, let them nibble the grasses down to nothing, and once it was flat they could spot all the mines quite easily because they weren't shallow, they were like kind of sticking up, and then they could just go in and pick it up. They didn't lose a single sheep, and nobody was exposed to great danger in getting these mines out. And it was a very economical, I mean, they didn't really need a lot of equipment. The sheep were already there, and they make their own sheep. So it was an intriguing and lateral way of solving a big, potentially very dangerous problem.
Love it.
I have a movie one that I've always enjoyed, and it's the movie Marathon Man. Is about a runner, Dustin Hoffman, who's escaping a Nazi doctor. And he is being chased on the Queensboro Bridge, I believe, and he's being chased by this car, and he's a marathon runner, but he can't beat out a car. And this car is coming up to him, and he's running and running and running. And as the car gets closer, he's got no place to go. He's thinking, does he jump in the river or what? What can he do? But then he looks over in the opposing lane of traffic eastbound toward Queens, and he just climbs over a railing, and then he's on the eastbound lane, and the guy chasing him has to go all the way into Manhattan to make the U-turn to come back around. So it's like, well, I don't have to run out of that one. And it's just one of those, I don't know if I would have thought of that if I were being chased by a car that, oh, they only have one-way traffic on each side of the bridge.
Beautiful.
But
And
anyway,
who knows how long it took him to get over there and turn around, and
that's true,
what
plus
time of day was
the
it, and
toll. It was long before Easy Pass or anything like that, so he probably has to have exact change and all that other stuff. So it's I think there's probably a bunch more. I'm sure our listeners would love to tell us about them, and they can do that out over at our Camp Lehigh Facebook page. So we'd like to hear what your favorite lateral thinking was. That would be a nice thing.
Especially real life examples, like
yeah,
something you've done that that love to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Well, again, thank you for joining us. If you'd like to continue the conversation, as I said, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a like and maybe even a review at the podcasting streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And please be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.